Isaiah chapter 44. I came across this week, and this is the New Living Translation. It fits pretty well with what we're going to be talking about this morning as we gather, but listen to what Isaiah says here in Isaiah 44. Receiving a prophecy from the Lord, this is what the Lord had spoken to him and through him. It starts in verse 9, and it says, "How foolish are those who manufacture idols. These prized objects are really worthless. The people who worship idols don't know this, so they put them all to shame. Who but a fool would make his own god, an idol that cannot help him one bit? All who worship idols will be disgraced, along with these craftsmen, mere humans who claim that they can make a god. They may all stand together, but they will stand in terror and shame. The blacksmith, he stands at his forge to make a sharp tool, pounding and shaping it with all of his might. His work makes him hungry and weak. It makes him thirsty and faint. Then the wood carver measures a block of wood, and he draws a pattern on it. He works with his chisel and his plane and carves it into a human figure. He gives it human beauty and puts it in a little shrine. He cuts down cedars. He selects the cypress and the oak. He plants the pine in the forest to be nourished by the rain. Then he uses part of the wood to make a fire. With it he warms himself, and he makes his bread. Then, yes, it is true, he takes the rest of it and makes himself a god to worship. He makes himself an idol, and he bows down in front of it. And he burns part of the tree to roast his meat to keep himself warm. He says, ah, that fire feels good. Then he takes what is left and he makes his god, a carved idol. He falls down in front of it, worshiping and praying to it. Rescue me, he says, you are my god. Such stupidity and arrogance. Their eyes are closed. They cannot see. Their minds are shut, and they cannot think. The person who made the idol never stops to reflect. And I like this. The person who made the idol never stops to reflect. Why, it's just a block of wood. I burned half of it for heat, and I used it to make my bread and roast my meat. How can the rest of it be a god? Should I bow down to worship a piece of wood? The poor, deluded fool feeds on ashes. He trusts something that can't help him at all. Yet he cannot bring himself to ask, is this idol that I'm holding in my hand really just a lie? Lord, thank you that you are so much bigger than any idols that we create with our hands, that we create with our minds and our hearts, and that we place before us. My prayer for us this morning is that we will know you. My prayer for us this morning is that we will understand how we are known by you. You're not a God who's distant. You're a God who's close. You're a God that has made himself known, who wants to be known. So I ask God that your Holy Spirit will meet us where we are at today. My prayer is that you will penetrate us with the scriptures that we're going to look at, that as we come face to face with you, that we will find ourselves going, oh, and taking what we have in our hands and being able to ask the question, is what I'm holding a lie? And we will be finding ourselves desiring and wanting to be clinging to the truth, to a known God who knows us intimately. Help us with that, I pray this morning, by your Spirit, in Jesus' name. Amen. We do have a couple of announcements as we get going this morning. If you're new here, I'm so glad that you are with us. For those who have been coming since quarantine is over, obviously you know some things have been adjusted. Some things are different than what you would have experienced perhaps in the past. Offering plates are not passed. We have some boxes at the exits that if the Lord leads you to give in that way, we have a very generous group of believers. Thank you so much. I'm extremely humbled by this group of believers. And so I just want you to be aware of where those things are at. We are taking precautions. Many have masks. Some do not have masks. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. The idea of this is we don't know why someone has one or someone doesn't, but we want to offer grace in that way. Some have medical conditions in that sense. So just be mindful of those that are around you in that way. But as we look at moving forward into ministry, next Sunday will be a fall kickoff Sunday. We have to change the way that we've done some of these things in the past, and we've worked with our leadership, and our leadership is committed to saying, okay, we're going to figure this out. We're going to move forward in this. We're going to do it well and mindfully and try to be as respectful as we can and as safe as we can. So we will have children's ministry. In fact, children's ministry in one small capacity has begun this morning. We have opened up a children's room. And so if you have a child that you feel like would do well in a children's room today, we have people that are staffing that room. We're taking seriously sanitation and protection in that way. And so, again, this is up to you, but it's an offering that we have decided to step into. And so there is a children's room available that is out these back doors to the south and then up the ramp to the left. And so if you want to use that facility, by all means, you may use the children's room. Okay, what you can start to expect as we start to open up some of these children's ministries. One is we have Awana coming up. People have been asking, is there going to be Awana? The answer is yes, but again, it's going to look differently. It's going to be very family-minded, family-orientated ministry. It will be happening here, much different. It will look. If you have questions on that, please talk to Danelle Arndt. On that, you can ask me, but I'm probably going to direct you back to her anyhow. We're going to have more information on this stuff come next week as we start to really engage this. Women's Bible study is coming up. We have a couple of offerings already. Perhaps it can be expanded, but right now we have two of them that are going to be offered on Thursdays. One is on Thursday afternoon, starting at, I believe, 1 o'clock, and one's going to be on Thursday evenings. If you have questions on that, please contact Laura Buckhouse. She actually is going to have a table out in the hallway following the service if you want to sign up for that or have more information from her. Fair enough? Very good. Thank you, Laura. Also, Chris is starting off next Sunday night. He's having a fall ministry kickoff with the 6th through 12th graders. He wants to do it outside. Again, the idea of we're being creative as to how we do some of these things, and that's going to be running from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and that's all 6th grade through 12th graders. One thing that we do have a ministry need for yet with our Awana program, one of the blessings that we've been able to do, and again, there's challenges, but we've talked through how we can do some of these things, is being able to provide a meal for those who come in, especially with a family-oriented ministry night. If you have a burden or a passion for cooking, and you are willing to cook, say, one Wednesday night a month, I would ask you to talk to Krista Paulson. Krista's sitting over back there. There's your hand right there. You can contact me, but again, I'm going to push you back over to Krista. We have some have already on board, but that's a ministry need. We think this could be a really cool thing that we can, again, engage with families. And so if that's something that's like, wow, I like to cook. I'm good at it. We would really like to use you in that way. So if you have interest in that, please contact Krista. Checking my notes, I think I've hit everything that I need to hit, at least for now. One more thing that you're going to find next week is we are going to take, if you remember, at the beginning of the summer, we handed out some fishing lure kits to any student, any kid who had interest. They came in, we gave them a fishing lure kit. They could make three different fishing lures. So next Sunday, all those students who took the lures and made them and then sent us pictures of the fish that they caught, we're putting together a slideshow. So during the service next week, you're going to get to see all these kids that caught fish with those lures. I think that'll be kind of fun. But with that, we actually have a few extra kits, and I want to give them away today. But going with the theme of what we're talking about this morning, it's going to have to be a little bit of a competition. And I realize that we have to be safe, so safety first. I'm going to put on my plastic gloves because this is going to involve interaction. And as we know, this will protect you from anything, okay? These are magic plastic gloves. Okay, so kids, I'm going to show you a picture. You have to be, I would say, the age of 18 and under for this. This is the fishing lure group, all right? So if you can identify who this is, if you know who this picture is, then just raise your hand. I will probably pick on you, and if someone raises their hand before you and I don't see it, sorry, just deal with it, okay? This is also a lesson in losing because not everyone gets a participation trophy in life, okay? All right, I saw you, Benjamin. Santa Claus. Do you know Santa Claus?
No.
Then how'd you know that was Santa Claus? Because. What? What gave it away? His mustache? Yeah, pretty much his mustache. Okay, that's just a single fishing lure kit there. So this is one way that we're going to get rid of some of these extra things that I have cluttering up my office right now, okay? I know. Hey, they're totally good. You're going to see next week on the video, you're going to see how many of these lures were actually effective. And look, people caught a lot of fish with them. Okay, you ready? So that's Santa Claus. Well, and who was this? There's a couple of people that kind of caught the humor in that, right? But no one 18 and under, right? Okay, that's right. I see a hand. Who is it? Tim Allen, also known as Santa Claus. That's right. I don't want to walk in front of these microphones. Are you sure? It's got a pointy end. Wait, I got one without a pointy end. We'll do this one. Yeah, if I throw it badly, then I'm going to be mocked forever. Nice. Okay. That was a better catch than it was a throw, I think, right? Okay. How about this? If you ever want to know how to be cool, it's this simple. You turn the hat on sideways. That's it. It's magic coolness. Yes, Axel, I saw your hand. Lecrae, are you a Lecrae fan?
My dad just told me that.
Your dad just told you that. Wow. Your dad doesn't even have a hat on sideways. Nice catch, Axel. Okay. Now, kids, be mindful, parents. There are sharp hooks in these containers. Okay. I know they look like they're healthy prescriptions. They're not. Okay. So they should be taken with adult supervision. So make sure the kids are not opening them up during the service here. Okay, next one's a little bit tougher. Now, parents, avoid helping them early on here, okay? It's a good guess, but that's not right. Okay, who is it? It's Moses. Look at that. I gave you the tablets. That totally was a giveaway there. Very good. All right, I think I've got one left. Oh, I got a couple left. I'm going to run out of lures, but I got more in my office, so we'll keep going that way. Okay, who's this? No, you already got one. Yes. Wait, you already got one too. JFK, also known as, what's his first name? What is his middle name? It's F. Okay. My box is empty, but I have a couple more, so just you see me after the service, and I have more. Okay, I got two left. All right, this one's really tough. Okay, ready? So I had to be politically correct, you know, and go both sides of the spectrum, so. All right, yes. Donald Trump. All right, Logan, you see me after church. We'll get you one of those, okay? I don't need these gloves on anymore because I don't have any more to give out. Okay, we got one more. Ready for this one? No one's raising hands. Hey, see it. There it is. Jesus. Now, here's the question. Do you know him? This is what's interesting. If we look at these faces, and we can identify Santa Claus. Some of you can identify Tim Allen if you have a parent nearby, or Lecrae, obviously, in that sense. But we see these people, and we can recognize these people, and we can say, oh, I know who they are. But then there's something different here. And I want us to grasp this today because I feel like we're going to look at these scriptures and I think there's something so different about God and so different about Jesus. I just don't want us to miss this reality that we can, what we just heard, know him. And if you're sitting here, it's like, well, I don't know if I know God. I don't know if I know him. Good. I want you to wrestle with that the whole time we get through this today. We're going to look at Acts 17, and if you've been with us, we've been going through the book of Acts. Acts is written by Luke, who is also the author of the Gospel of Luke, and he writes this book to a man named Theophilus, who is a Greek guy. And so what we're finding out, which I find this really interesting, is Paul, who's a main character with where we're at right now, he's actually in these Greek territories, these Greek cities. So Theophilus, the original recipient of this letter, would have resonated as like, wow, I know where he's talking about. It's like you're watching some show on television, maybe it's a reality show, and you find out that there's someone from Minnesota, and you see that, oh, they're from the Brainerd area. Oh, I've been there. You have that connection that almost happens in that regard. And I think Theophilus would have felt that same way. As the gospel moves into Greece, as we started to see last week, I think Theophilus would have just really resonated with a lot of that. And we're going to see today is a little bit more of what's going on in that Greek culture. So where we left it off, if you remember last week, it was in Acts chapter 16. Paul had gone into the Macedonia. Remember, this was the birth of the church in Philippi. And what was really cool, and I don't know if I emphasized it well enough, but what was really astounding in that Macedonian church, in that church in Philippi, is that there was no synagogue, meaning that there was less than 10 married men. You had to have 10 married men, Jewish men, to be able to have a synagogue. So there was less than that. There was such a small remnant of Jews there. And then what we saw was this Philippian church just thrived. And could it be somewhat because of the fact that there wasn't the Jewish underlying synagogue belief that was so profound? You follow? Because they really had this fresh start. It was like this brand newness. They didn't come with the baggage that was coming that they were having to interact with the Jewish people and the law. And the gospel of this church just blew up and it flourished. And some of those first converts, the first convert that was recorded that we found was this woman, Lydia, this rich woman, who was not a Jew. She was a Greek. That's really a cool story. Not only then we saw this, and then we saw this poor slave girl come to faith. And then we see this jailer and his whole family come to faith. And it's this incredible story. But where we left it off, and I don't know if you had a chance to go in, home and read the rest of chapter 16, because we kind of stopped it right there. But what we found is Paul had been arrested. Remember the jailer, they were miraculously freed. He said, no, don't kill yourself. We haven't left. The jailer takes him over to his house. They feed them and he shares the gospel and the whole family is baptized. And at this point, the magistrates call for Paul and Silas to be brought back to them. In other words, send them over. The magistrates would have been in charge of keeping the peace in the culture, in that city. If they wanted to keep their job, they keep everything a status quo. They weren't there to raise up a stink. Their job was to kind of keep things, everything just nice and even keel. And so for something like this, they wanted Paul and Silas to come in, and they were just going to let them go. All right, you've served your punishment. Now go and don't do this anymore. And Paul says to the jailer, says, no. If the magistrates want to come and let us go, guess what? They got to come to us. And when the magistrates come to us and they find out that they're actually Roman citizens, the magistrates probably just turned really pale in the face because what they did was just illegal. They can't flog a Roman citizen, that was against their law, and they didn't know us. It's like, I think they just turned pale in the face, like, this is bad. This is really, really bad. And so they want them just to get out of there quietly, and Paul doesn't necessarily go away quietly. And I don't believe that he's kind of raised up this big old, you know, riot, if you will. But I think what he wanted to do is he wanted the Philippian church to see that he was wrongly accused and wrongly arrested. That God was who he said he was and that his testimony could be valid because of the fact that he's a truth teller, if you would. So he called them in, they see him, and they say, okay, we're here, go ahead and go on your way. And so what we're going to end up seeing now is Paul and Silas, they move on their way and they go to Thessalonica. And they run into some issues. So we're going to move through chapter 17 fairly quick. I have a number of other passages that I want to be able to bring into this too. I know it's a lot of verses, but we're going to try to move through it. It's very narrative in its styling, so we'll see what we can do here. So very quickly, when Paul and his companions had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica where there was a Jewish synagogue. So what do we just learn from this? There's at least 10 married Jewish men who are in the city of Thessalonica. So they have enough to have an actual synagogue in Thessalonica. And just to show you again, this is Paul's second missionary journey. Here we go. He started in Antioch, went into Tarsus and Derbe and Lystra and Iconium. Those are some of those cities that he had hit in that first missionary journey. And this is where, right in here, is where the Holy Spirit was directing him elsewhere. It's believed that he wanted to go here, but instead the Holy Spirit pressed him north, and he had this vision of a man in Macedonia. And so he goes up into this area here and hits Troas and then Philippi. And you see what happened in Philippi. There's this divine appointment that God had for Paul. Paul had no idea what was going to happen in Philippi. And he shows up expecting to see a synagogue, and there isn't even that. And yet God takes that and does something amazing. So from there, we see him. He hits these cities here, and now he's into Thessalonica. And well, watch what happens in Thessalonica. So, as was his custom, which we've seen over and over again, as Paul goes to these different cities, the first thing he does, he goes into the synagogue, to the Jews first, and he preaches the gospel to the Jews. And he's always opening it up to the Greeks then thereafter, but this is where he always starts. So he goes to the synagogue, and on three consecutive Sabbath days, so 3 weeks, he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving that the Messiah had to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I am proclaiming to you is the Messiah, he said. The Jews would have known about the historical writings, the scriptural writings of the Messiah. And so he's basically trying to convince these Jews, like, Jesus was the Messiah. He was who he said he was. Some of the Jews were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a large number of God-fearing Greeks. And there you have both, as we've been talking about. And quite a few prominent women. And these prominent women is believed that they were probably the wives of actual Greek leaders in that city. So that's what it is believed, that in this prominent women, they were like, these are leaders' wives in that community. And you know, if your wife tells you to go somewhere, gentlemen, we usually say, yes, dear. You know? And that's pretty profound. That's actually very convincing. Verse 5, but other Jews were jealous. And now watch what happens again. We've seen this pattern over and over again and where the resistance comes from. And notice we didn't have this resistance in Philippi, but we have it in Thessalonica. But the Jews were jealous, and so they rounded up some bad characters. So basically, they went into the shady parts of town, and they found some people that you just don't want to mess with, especially in a dark alley at night. Okay? So they find these shady characters from the marketplace, and they formed a mob, and they started a riot. This is just like a mob of nasty that's walking around, and they're literally trying to start this riot. And so they rushed to Jason's house, which is where Paul and Silas had been, Jason's house, in search of Paul and Silas in order to bring them out of the crowd. When they did not find them, they dragged Jason. So they dragged the homeowner off and some other believers before the city officials, shouting, these men who have caused trouble all over the world have now come here. So we've heard about their reputation, what they're doing in other places, and they've come here now to Thessalonica. And Jason has welcomed them into his house. They are all defying Caesar's decrees, saying that there is another king, one called Jesus. And so a couple things are happening here. These city officials are basically saying, you guys aren't keeping the peace. You know, that's why they bring them to the city officials. We got to keep this quiet. And the Jews know that if starting this mob and bringing it to the city officials, they don't care what's right and wrong. They care about keeping the peace. And we're going to see their reaction or what they choose to do with it points right to that. But then they hit this loaded statement, and Caesar would have been God, self-proclaimed really to them. It's like Caesar is Lord, would have been a common phrase that the Greeks would have held to. And so in looking at this, they're saying, these guys are proclaiming that someone else is greater than Caesar. So when they heard this, the crowd and the city officials were thrown into turmoil. And that's not what city officials want in this sense. Then they made Jason and the others post bond and let them go. So basically what they said is, Jason, here's the deal. You get peace going on in your home, or we're taking all that you own. That's really, in a nutshell, what's happening. So either you get a handle on this right now, make things quiet. You know how it is if you're a parent at home and you have multiple children and those children fight. There comes a point where you don't care who's at fault anymore. All you care about is quiet, right? All you care about is, but she did this, he did this. I don't care. I have no interest anymore on what's right and wrong. All I want is peace. And so that's really where the city officials are going, like, Jason, I don't care. Maybe what Paul and Silas are doing is right. I could care less. All I want you to know, Jason, is you get a handle on this right now, or we're taking everything that you own and you'll be left with nothing. And here's what Jason does. As soon as it was night, the believers sent Paul and Silas away to Berea. He said, basically, here's the deal, Paul and Silas. You got to go. That doesn't mean they don't believe anymore, but it does mean that it's like, I think it's time for you to move on. This kind of matters to us. And so then they sent Paul and Silas away to Berea. On arriving there, They went to the Jewish synagogue. So there's enough, again, in Berea for a Jewish synagogue. And Berea is an interesting place. We're going to look at that here in a moment, too. Here's Berea. Notice this path. They're right along the coastline. But in Berea, something changes. They actually shift big time inward. This wasn't down the main road. This was almost as if it was another divine appointment that God had in store for them, that the Holy Spirit led them inward. This would be similar to Twin Cities, major city, and Little Falls, less major city, you know, or anything outstate Minnesota, if you will, where it's just like, yeah, you're not really, you're kind of out there. Yeah, we know you exist, but we just, you kind of leave them be. And that's similar with, as Paul's coming in here, he shifts to Berea, and that doesn't make sense strategically, and yet God has an amazing, amazing ability to take that which seems to make no sense and do something amazing. In Berea, we're not going to get into this week, but in Berea, there is a man who comes to faith in Berea who's going to also take that gospel and explode it elsewhere. God is a God of timing, and he's got such great things that he pulls in. He's like, guess what, Paul? I'm putting you over here. It might seem like it doesn't make sense to you or anyone else, but I'm going to do something really cool with it. And he does that, and we'll cover that in a future week. But in Berea, Bereans are known for, and we've talked about this at different times, we look at, oh, to be a Berean is to challenge everything for the purpose of truth. And some of that's true, but I want to look at that a little bit closer. So now, the Berean Jews were of more noble character than those of Thessalonica. In other words, here you have the Jews of Berea, and they had enough sense to say, all right, I want to find out if what Paul is saying is actually true. Not raising a mob in a riot. There's a whole different approach to it. Their desire to understand and know, is what Paul is saying true? Is what Paul is saying matching with what our understanding of the scriptures are? And they're kind of looking back and forth at those. Does this fit? Does this make sense? For they received the message with great eagerness and examined the scriptures every day to see if what Paul said was true. As a result, many of them believed, as did also a number of prominent Greek women and many Greek men. So one of the things that we tend to do, and I just want to offer a bit of caution on this, we tend to look at, and I've heard it said in a number of different places, where, oh, we should be like Bereans where we challenge everything. Well, one of the things that happens when we start challenging everything is if we start scrutinizing for the purpose of trying to find out where you're wrong, that's not what the Bereans are doing. The Bereans are looking at what Paul is saying. It's like, is what Paul is saying fitting with what the scriptures say? You know, so that I can approach this idea of this Berean mindset and say, well, I can, you know, almost puff myself up. Well, I'm going to challenge everything. I'm a Berean. That's what I do. And you scrutinize what the teachers are saying. That's not the heart behind it. The heart behind it is this what God is laying out for us? Do you see the difference? And so that's just a little piece of that in regards to that. It's good. I don't ever want you to accept anything that I say just because I say it. I try to do my best to read through the scriptures, to read through the commentaries, and give something that's accurate. If there's something that I'm in question or it's like, I don't even know if this is true, I'll avoid saying it. I just pull it back. And there might be others that say, oh, absolutely, that's true. I'm not willing to do that because I don't want to ever put you guys in a position where it's like, well, Pastor Ryan said this, it has to be true. If it fits with the scriptures, if it fits with God, what God has laid out for us, then by all means, believe it. But if there's something that's misaligned there, it's not God's fault. That's my fault. And that's not what I ever want to or desire to do. My heart is to give you the truth. Okay, on that. So now what we find is that the Thessalonians find out that the Bereans, or the Paul and Silas, are down in Berea doing some problems there too. So, but catch the character here. But when the Jews in Thessalonica learned that Paul was preaching the word of God at Berea, some of them went there too, agitating crowds. They're doing the same thing that they were doing in Thessalonica and stirring them up. The believers immediately sent Paul to the coast, but Silas and Timothy stayed at Berea. Those who escorted, I like this, they escorted Paul, brought him to Athens, and then left with instructions for Silas and Timothy to join him as soon as possible. And so now they were in Thessalonica, then they were in Berea, and now whether they took the sea route or the land route is irrelevant. It is not known, but they made their way down to Athens here. Okay? The Bereans escorted them. I just find that really cool. They didn't just send Paul away. It's like, no, we're going to go with you. We want to make sure you get to Athens safely. I just feel like there's a little bit of a cool piece of character that we see even more so in the Bereans there. Okay. So Paul is in Athens, and this is where we get to the meat of what we want to talk about here today. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. In Paul's day, it is believed that there would have been more than 70,000 idols in the city of Athens. The population of Athens was about 30,000 people. That means there's like 2+ idols for every person. There's more than twice as many idols in the city as there are people. This group of people in Athens obviously looked at idol worship, and they're starving for something. They're starving for some way. How can I connect with a god? Well, this god didn't do it for me, and they make another idol for another god, and they do it over and over. I checked into some research, and prominent gods I'm talking about, these are all small g's that I'm referring to, Rome would have had, what did I count? 50? I think I came up with 49 fairly main gods that Rome worshipped. Greece was over 100. And one of the things that the Grecians would do is if someone came in with a foreign god, a foreign idol, they would evaluate, well, is this god real? And they would add it to their numbers. And so that's why Greece had so many. We're talking about over 100 of different gods that they tried to allocate and worship and appease. So he was greatly distressed. And it wasn't like he's upset. I would think that he literally walked in, it's like, oh, what a sad, heartbreaking state to come in and see this city is full of idol worship. Do you ever feel that as we look back on this country? It's like, oh, where are we going? This is heavy. What would it take for us to, like that passage out of Isaiah 44 comes to mind, what would it take for us to look at what's in our hand and say, oh, am I just following a lie? Our country, each one of us, just as much, I don't want to miss that. We need Christ more than ever. And so, if you're not burdened, at least pray for your country right now. I would ask you to consider that. So he reasoned in the synagogue. So Paul goes to the synagogue. It's the same pattern as we have had before with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace. So he goes into the marketplace, but it's not the synagogue. This is where all the Greeks would be. Greek scholars, in fact, even will be there. Day by day with those who happen to be there. A group of Epicureans and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. The Epicureans were a group that basically became known as, if you want to do it, if it feels good, go ahead. We're all in favor. You shouldn't have anything that kind of makes you, you know, oppressed. They were very free in that way, and that was kind of the Epicureans. They didn't really care about what Paul had to say in regards to a god, because like, if that's going to interfere with my happiness, not real interested. The Stoics were a little bit different. The Stoics were more of the religious people. They were the philosophers that would look at these idols and wonder, okay, who's the next god that's coming in? Is this God real? Is this God not real? Some of them ask, what is this babbler trying to say? So they're mocking Paul. We're going to see some of the language. It looks like they're interested, but it's really mockery that's happening with what Paul is saying. If you ever share your faith and you feel like you're mocked, you're not alone. Paul dealt with that over and over again. And yet, why did he do it? Because he looked at the city, he saw the depravity, and it's like, I've got to share what I know about Jesus. So he says, these people say, he seems to be advocating foreign gods. All right, we've got more foreign gods coming in. What's the deal here now? We've got enough gods. And if you haven't noticed, Paul, we've got 70,000 idols. All right, we really don't need another idol brought in. Okay, so I don't know what you think you have to offer, but it's not much. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. The resurrection in particular was something that would have really been opposed to. It was a little bit more along the lines of reincarnation, which is not resurrection, that they would have been holding to, where they kind of keep coming back until they find this euphoria, which they really hardly ever believed would even happen. So then they took him, Paul, and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus. So this is a meeting more of the scholars to kind of decide, is the God you're talking about, is he really worth are you really worth listening to? Before going to the Areopagus, he would have probably been given a day to prepare. So this wasn't just immediate, but this he likely would have had some time to kind of get ready to say what he was going to say. And where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching that you are presenting? You're bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. They're sitting around and they're just talking. What about this God? What about this? And they just talk in circles. And what's accomplished? Nothing. It's really an ego trip for many of them, where they're gathering around to show their great intellect. And so they bring Paul, and it's like, well, who is this Paul that can tell us anything that's different from what we don't already know? Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and he said, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. Obviously, you've got 70,000 idols. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with the inscription. This is what I want us to see. And this is where Paul takes it. And this is relevant for us. This is where the rubber meets the road for anyone who comes face to face with God and who he is. I even found an altar with this inscription to an unknown God. These Greeks are worshiping a God they don't even know. So you are ignorant, he says to these people. So you're ignorant of the very things that you worship. You're offering stuff to these gods because they need it. You know, it was not uncommon that they would actually try to bring food and do these other things to these gods because, oh, if this God needs food, if I don't feed him, this God's going to starve. And they would do that so that this God would show favor on them. We read in our scriptures, who is God? He doesn't need food. He doesn't need anything that we have to offer to him. He created it all in the first place. So you're ignorant of the very thing that you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. Look at what Habakkuk 2 says. Of what value is an idol carved by a craftsman? So we've been, you know, home remodel projects or home improvement projects, that's pretty much the life of the home, right? Especially if you're a do-it-yourself or just the jobs are never done. Now, maybe you hire those things out and you get your jobs done. Good for you. I'm not that way. And so we've been working on our kitchen now for probably 3 years. It's quick. It's a small project, really. But I wouldn't you know it, I just finished up the countertops last Friday. Not like 2 days ago, but a week before. So within a week, you guys know what's coming, right? One of the edges got chipped. Right. It was a laminate. Okay. One of the edges gets chipped. What do you do? When I look at the objects that I worship, if I really were to take the truth of it, it's just a block of wood. It's just a block of wood and plastic and glue. Or an image that teaches lies. For the one who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. And this is Isaiah 44. I'm going to show two verses. This is the beginning and the end. And it says, all who make idols are nothing. And the things that they treasure are worthless. Those who would speak up for them are blind. They are ignorant of their own shame. This is a picture of some of the ancient Greek idols that Paul would have seen. They're crumbling. They're aged and worn. Parts of the idols are falling off. They were created by human hands. It's just a piece of rock. That's all it is. The poor, deluded fool feeds on ashes. It's interesting. We look at even the scriptures, and I don't have a full understanding of it all, but in the Old Testament, we find that there was burnt offerings. You know, that they would burn these offerings that were given to God as a sacrifice. God didn't need to eat the food. That wasn't the point. That's never spoken of in the scriptures like that, like some of the Greeks and stuff would do. Like, oh, when this burns up, it's actually giving food to the gods to eat. That is not what's specified in the scriptures in any way that we read. But one of the things it does specify is that it would be burned down to ashes. And so then what I see and what I kind of, the poor deluded fool, it's eating ashes. If you've burned it all up into nothing and you're just eating dust. He trusts something that can't help him at all, yet he cannot bring himself to ask. And I like that last statement. Is this idol that I'm holding in my hand, is it just a lie? Acts 17, verse 24. The God who made, and this is what Paul does now. He goes and he says, you guys, if we were to ask you the questions in a sense, you know, where did you come from? And there's some theories in Greek, you know, philosophy. And where'd you come from? That, well, we don't really know. Paul's going to address that. Do you matter? He's going to address that. Where are you going? What's your purpose? He kind of addresses that. And this is where Paul, so he takes a totally different approach than he does with the Jews. The Jews, he points back to the scriptures. With these guys, it's like, let me tell you guys where this all comes from. Let me tell you where that rock and the wood that you're making these idols actually comes from. The God who made the world and everything in it, in other words, who made the stuff that you made your idols out of, he's the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples. In other words, this unknown that God that you have, guess what? I know who it is. This unknown God that you worship, that you're clueless and ignorant about, guess what? I've met him. And Paul met him face to face on the road to Damascus. He does not live in temples. Our God doesn't need a roof over his head, a shelter. Our God doesn't need food. He's not served by human hands. He doesn't need you to go and give him food. He doesn't need you to create him and to give shape to him. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need anything. Rather, he himself, he's the one that gives life to you. You have nothing to do with who he is. He's already given it to you. He gives you life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God knew that you would be here today. He appointed you to be here today. You're alive in this COVID time because he wanted you alive in this COVID time. You may regret having to be alive in this COVID time, but he wants you here now because he's got something for you through this. I got to remind myself that all the time because I got to be honest, I'm sick of it. I'm so sick of it. But yet, okay, God doesn't make a mistake like that. All right, Lord, then show me what the purpose is because I'm tired of it. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. He was there at the beginning, and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him. You know what that means? That means that God can be found, if you will. He's not hiding behind a bush. They would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him, and Paul's actually quoting Greek philosophers here. He uses their own words and he kind of flips it and says, guess what? This thing again that you're ignorant about, God, the one you don't know, but you can know, is the one you're looking for. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. And Paul says, your own poets have said it, but guess what? This is how it looks. Not like you think in the Greek culture, because they actually believe the gods and mankind would actually interact and they would have offspring that way. That's not the point. Paul's not in any way condoning that. Therefore, since we are all God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human hands, designs, or skills. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but guess what? Jesus has come now and times have changed. But now he commands all people everywhere to repent, for he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. When they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered. That's the problem that they had. Nah, forget it. You're full of it. But others said, we want to hear you again on this subject. At that, Paul leaves the council. This is like a mic drop. You know, Paul gives a statement and said, well, we'd like to hear more. Sorry, I'm done here. And he walks off, giving the people a choice. What are you going to do? Are you going to stay in your own ignorance? Or are you going to follow the one who's preaching the gospel? Some of them go. Some of them stay. Some of the people became followers of Paul and believed. Among them, Dionysius, thank you, a member of the Areopagus, so a member of this leading council, and a woman named Damaris, and a number of others. God has made himself known. He's not hiding that we can't know him. We can know him. We find proof in the scriptures. Romans 1 says, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of the people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Look at this. Since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, if you haven't looked out and see how things go from season to season, how a simple acorn can turn into an oak tree. If that doesn't blow your mind right there, God has revealed himself in all of this. He can be known. His eternal power and his divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made so that people are without excuse. Exodus 6, I will take you as my own people, God said to the Israelites, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. We can know him. We can know him. Some of us think, yeah, I know. If this doesn't stir you again because of the fact that God was different than any of the other gods, any of the Greek gods, because he was knowable. But you are a chosen people, 1 Peter chapter 2, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are a people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Then they asked him, this is John chapter 8, where's your father? You do not know me or my father, Jesus replied. If you knew me, you would know my father also. God revealed himself to us in the sending of Jesus Christ. Remember that last picture we saw, kids? It was Jesus. Do you know him? I hope your answer is yes, because you can know him. It's a relational God that we have. It's not a God we make an idol and sit down and bow down and offer him things. Here, God, you need to drink this and eat this so you remain strong. Jeremiah 1, before I formed you in the womb, guess what? Not only is this God knowable, he knows you. That's a little bit humbling sometimes. I don't want God to know everything about me, but he knows it. You're probably thinking the same thing. I remember when Sarah and I first started dating, whenever I say those words, Sarah's body gets tense. She doesn't know the stories. But when we first started dating, I saw quickly, this is someone I want to get to know. And so I did the, you know, some of you heard some of these stories before. I did the usual things that you do, like memorize her social security number. You know, a lot of guys do that to meet a girl. It really impacts them. So by doing, by seeing her, it's like, I want to get to know you. And so I did. I memorized her social security number, and I pursued time and whatever I could do. I'd go to the library. I don't go to the library. But why did I go to the library? Because I knew she would be there. She's a study bug. I'm not. She would be, where's Sarah? Oh, I know she is. She'll be at the library. So I walk in the library. Oh, fancy meeting you here. Mind if I sit down? Why did I do it? Because I wanted to get to know who this person was. Oh, I pursued time. Probably drove her crazy. It's really remarkable that we're together. I did everything wrong that you could do wrong, probably. But I wanted to know her so badly, I was willing to invest the time to get to know her. And she, if you know her, she's actually fairly reserved. And so to get to crack through that shell is not easy to do. Well, guess what? With God, that's not the case. God has made himself known. All we have to do is open up the word and the scriptures and see what it is he's revealed about himself to us. But there comes a point when we start to realize he knows me intimately as well. And that's scary, but it's good. Before you were knit together in your mother's womb, he knew you. He called Jeremiah. I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet of the nations. Alas, sovereign Lord, I said, I don't know how to speak. I'm too young. In other words, I'm inadequate. And God's like, I know. I know you are. If I thought you were adequate, I wouldn't have called you. God can be known. Do you know him? If you don't know him, let's let today be the day that you know him. And then understand he knows you. Oh, he knows you. He knows where you're struggling. He knows where you're upset. He knows how you feel about politics. He knows how you feel about COVID. You don't have to pretend that you're one way or the other. He knows it. And he still likes you. Deeply and intimately. Will you seek him today? Will you come to a new and a fresh realization that he can be known, you can know him? I'm going to skip a couple here. What do we got? I'm real. Shut her down there, I think. The God of the universe that created all of these things, he knows you and he wants you to know him. He's not hiding. Maybe for some of you, as we worship, you're feeling the Lord stirring in you. Lane said it last week, and I really appreciated it. The altar is open. You can come, you can pray. You can pray by yourself if you want to keep distance. I respect that. If you want someone to pray with you, just kind of give a nod or point a finger, and we can do that as well. But for some, you may be feeling like, I want to know him, and I feel like I've never known him. Guess what? Come up and just pray. And say, Lord, I don't feel like I know you. You tell me that I can. Will you help me? So I'm going to invite Lane and the worship team to come up. And as we worship, will you open yourself up to what the Lord has for you? And if it's something like, oh, through all of this, I feel so stressed and I feel like the Lord is just so distant, then maybe your prayer is, Lord, I feel like I need that connection with you again. I feel like I've been away for so long. I want to know you again. So let's worship.